Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Welcome back. Part two picks up right where we left off.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, it's there's a jagged edge to this intelligence, right? So we're talking about something smarter than us. It's already smarter than us in some areas, but it lagged behind us in a bunch of others. And it's not super predictable where it's going to be super smart and where it's going to be super dumb. And that's the big problem with adoption at the moment, because, you know, something might be amazing at, you know, Olympiad level mathematics, but it can't count the number of R's in the word strawberry, right? Mm-hmm. So it's let down by those zigs and the zags, you know, with the jagged edge of its intelligence. And so that for adoption, it's all about figuring out what's it good at and where do I still need to have a sanity test before I adopt it, you know?
But is that not part of the argument for the agentic AI, right? Find the right agent with the right skill set.
Yeah. I mean, look, agents, all agents are, because they we should have probably defined it just for your audience. It's just an AI system that makes its own sub goals. So an AI, most AI systems are AI workflows. So it's a workflow with AI at certain parts of the node to go, right, you know, information in, AI happens, then it goes and it calls tool. And then if something happens, it goes this way. And if something else happens, it goes that way. And you pre-program all the workflows that you want the system to be able to handle. And then you have an AI workflow, right? Or an AI enabled workflow or decision tree or a large action model or many other names that they have for them. And those are very useful systems. And they're pretty predictable. The problem is they can only do what they're programmed to do.
Yeah.
Right. The agentic systems are just given a brain and a bunch of tools and told to figure it out itself. Right. So you give it access to, you know, to reading information from here, writing information to there. You've got these sensors. You've got these, you know, APIs or MCPs nowadays, which is fancy APIs for AI agents. And it's just told to figure it out. So it like produces its own workflow on the fly. And it just constantly does this cycle of perceiving where it's up to, making a plan, and then acting on that plan, and then perceiving, planning, acting, perceiving, planning, acting, and just keeps on going and going until it gets to the, you know, until it either hits a rate limit or it succeeds. Yep. Right? The reason that's so powerful is it can try something, fail, try something else, fail, try something else, succeed. Yeah. And I think that's what you're saying there, Liam, right? Is that like this allows it to, you know, hit the edges of its intelligence in some areas and try something else.
Yeah. And, you know, you might end up with one agent that is good at that mathematics. Then you end up with building an agent with the right models and the right connections and the right tools that can count letters in words.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you can put scaffolding
end,
around an agent to fix the problems that it has. For instance,
I think the concept with an agent is that an agent doesn't bother counting R's. It doesn't want to get better at it. It finds the right tool to do that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you can see that in action if you just open up O3 or Gemini 2.5 or any of the thinking models and tell it to do something like produce you a bunch of data or ask it that question, right? Instead of trying to figure it out using its own large language model, it'll actually write a little Python script, run the script, and then go, oh, here's your answer. So it's like it's the equivalent of me asking, you know, my wife, Jasmine, you know, what's the square root of 753? And she just pull out a calculator and go, here it is. You know, she's got the tools, right? So yeah, when you've got tools that can do the things that you're bad at, which is what agents are really all about, then yeah, you're right. That helps a lot.
I really am going to be out of a job.
Yeah, it's funny actually. You know, your final job may be podcast host because the meaning of
well.
It does not pay well, but it might when it's the only job left. Yeah, the meaning economy is the one thing that, you know, we as humans want. Like we value the human experience, and just listening to another human try and make sense of the things that are happening helps us make sense of the things that are happening, you know.
But that's now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing. It's like I've seen a lot of talk about, you know, the value, the real value in the future is not going to be in, you know, productivity and the content. It's going to be in, like we talk about artisanship, right? It's like, well, right now you can go to IKEA and buy mass-produced furniture, but, you know, we really value the handcrafted, you know, furniture created by, you know, the furniture maker, what have you. And, you know, it's like, yes, we can use AI to generate art, but we really value the, you know, the hand-painted art by some expert artist or what have you. And it's like, well, No, we don't, because
yeah,
the reason that IKEA furniture is mass produced and more importantly mass consumed is because no, people don't care. And
yeah, if you just need somewhere to sit, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, yes, there will be an economy and a market for those things and for those human produced things, but even so, that's now, right? You know, there is bound to be a time where, and I say bound to be a time, and this could very well be next week. You know, I'm not saying this is this is some intangible, close but not quite within reach future. This could be tomorrow, right? A time when, you know, an AI can produce art that even the best connoisseurs cannot distinguish. You know, it's like we're talking about, I guess, a Turing test for art, I suppose. But you know, yeah, and I base this on.
Have I'd you argue read... we're there already.
Well, no, I was about to say that. Yeah, I mean, have you ever read "You Are Not So Smart"?
No, is that good?
It's phenomenal. Yes, it is. It's the book that I recommend to everyone. It's the missing manual for your brain.
Yeah, right.
So, okay. It's on our backlog of things to talk about.
Yeah. I encouraged Liam to read it. Anyway, there was an experiment that he talks about in this book where they got some of the world's best wine connoisseurs to do blind taste tests, right? Where
they gave them different wines. Is this just a Dunning-Kruger manifesto?
No. It's not. Well, yes.
Kind of.
The point being that in these blind taste tests, they've got these world-class wine connoisseurs, right? And, you know, Wienerphiles and, you know, these like, people that were, you know, top of the top, best of their game at, you know, identifying all the different bodies and aromas and subtle layers within, you know, whatever. They gave them these different wines blindfolded, and not only could they not tell the difference between, you know, an average bottle of Plonk and, you know, some $2,000 bottle of wine, they couldn't even tell the difference between white and red.
What? No.
Yep.
No way.
Way.
Really? My God.
So the point being that, you know, when you say we're there now, yeah, we're there now. Like, I don't think this concept of the value of human created things is going to be that valuable. Yeah. In fact, interestingly, there's this thing called historicity. I don't know if you have you ever read The Man in the High Castle?
Nope.
Have you watched the series?
No.
No. Okay. Man in the High Castle, book by Philip K. Dick. It's set. It's an alternate history. Runner. Yeah. It's an alternate history where the Axis forces won the war, and it's about a book that's an alternate history where they didn't. It's considered a classic. Anyway, there's this bit in there where they're talking about historicity, right? And he's talking about this lighter, and he says that it's a like a Zippo cigarette lighter type thing, and he says, you know, this lighter is valuable because of, you know, it was owned by someone's grandfather. I can't remember exactly, but it was owned by someone. It has this history, and it was owned by someone in the war, and, you know, it has value because of its history. But it's not actually its history. It's its historicity, right? It's because it's indistinguishable from any other one of this model of lighter. But this one is valuable because the story that's associated with it, which may or may not even be true.
Yeah. And the meaning we attribute to that story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, look, I think that there's another book I recommend, which is called The Status Game by William Storr, which is an interesting look at how humans value status or status, right? And what's interesting I don't know. I've lived too long in England and too long in Australia. I don't know how to speak at all anymore. But yes, no, it's interesting because once we give, I think the three of us, professionals who enjoy our job, right, which is probably relatively rare in the world, but we enjoy it to some extent because of the status it bestows upon us, right? I'm an AI expert. I like being an AI expert. It makes me feel smart and valued and useful, and it gives me a status as an AI expert, right? Probably we were talking about why am I so motivated to keep learning about AI? Probably some of it is status, right? It's embarrassing to admit because it's kind of a dirty word, but I think that there's a human drive for that. And there's a lot of talk about, like, if our jobs get automated, where does that leave us? We'll have no purpose. We'll have no status, basically. And what's interesting is that obviously work is not the only way to get status. Money is not the only way to get status. You've got family, you've got community, you've got charity, you've got knowledge, you've got expertise, you've got gaming, you've got dancing, you've got sports, you've got whatever, right? There's many, many different games, status games you can play to get the status that your monkey brain desires. So that was interesting. Like the aristocracy, right, is a good example of people who had never had jobs, but somehow they still liked living, right? So it means that like it's not a hopeless future if work goes away, right? So long as our needs are met and we still have other ways to get status, you know, our biological brains will be fine. Yeah.
That's a whole other topic.
It is a whole other topic, but I liked it. I was nervous about that until I read that book, which is funny because the book is horrific. it talks about Nazi Germany and Stalin's Russia and like how people ended up in the status games that they were in and how they ended up acting the way they acted as a full zeitgeist because of the game that was set up in a certain way that this is how you get status and this is how you lose status.
Yeah.
But yeah, but somehow I ended up feeling hopeful because of that book. I think I read it wrong.
Yeah. Interesting.
You need some AI to interpret it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you realize we've been going for an hour and a half and we haven't been able to shut him up?
Sorry, I'll stop now. How long
this
are these normally?
This is why we bring you on. Like, we're exhausted because we've already done an episode. Plus, it's way past my bedtime. It's like, let's just get Yuli to dial in and we just, you know, press the on button and, you know, away he goes. Say,
hey, Yuli, what do you think of AI? Yeah. All right. Well, I'll let you go to bed. It's been good.
You realize that actually Yuli didn't dial in.
Yeah, that's right. We had to drag him in. Yeah.
No, his AI agent did for him.
Yeah, Yuli's sleeping at the moment. Hi, I'm his avatar. There's a way to tell. If you try and get me to swear, I can't do it.
I want to ask you one last question before you go, Yuli.
Okay.
What impact do you think AI is having or will have on dance?
Ooh, you bastard. Okay. So, all right, for people who don't know, I'm also a salsa teacher. And I'm 42 now, so I'm crap, but I used to be good. And yeah,
dance. What credentials have you got?
I won a world championship. So anyway, yeah, no, I think, so I'm a dance coach, right? And which is why this whole Socratic digital Socrates thing is interesting to me, because pedagogy, the whole science of learning, is something I've been thinking about because I've been teaching dance since I was like 20. And it's all about giving quick feedback loops, like short feedback loops. You know, trying something, getting feedback, trying it slightly differently and building up muscle memory in the right way, right? So we can get that now with video systems that can watch what you're doing. Like if you've ever played, I don't know, any of the simple ones like Dance Dance Revolution, but even the stuff on the Wii or the old Kinect, if you had it, where like it tracks your skeleton and sees what you're doing. Are you doing the vague things vaguely in time, the rhythm games, even Beat Saber or something, right?
Yeah.
It gives you instant feedback. You did that right, you did that wrong. So imagine that at a higher resolution that can see exactly what your body's doing, what shape you're in, how you're moving smoothly, what your timing's like. Yeah, I think right now we could build, like it's not lucrative enough to have enough investment in it to have happened yet outside of a basic kind of gaming scenario. But right now we could build, you know, technology and AI to drastically improve people's dancing. The next step after that, because I do salsa dancing, which is primarily a partner dance, will be robotics, right? So you'll have robot. And in fact, we already, if you look at Unitree or Boston Dynamics or Figure Two, they're all, every one of them is trying to outdo each other in like robot dance offs. Ironically, none of them actually do the robot. Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to get there to the point that you'll be able to have a robot dance partner to practice with as well, which will be interesting, you know. But I think of dance is one of those things that feels relatively automation proof to me, because it's a social thing and it's a status thing and it's a mastery thing. And a lot of those just general drives that we have, like the reason people game is because it builds a progression curve into the game, right? That's one of the main motivators. They call it gamification, of putting those kind of, you know, mastery points and progression points into whatever it is you're doing. And dancing has that. So I think that once people are less bound by work, I think dance is going to take off in a big way. I'm quite excited about it. Yeah, there you go. Is that a good answer?
No.
Yeah.
No, rubbish.
We stopped recording.
Yeah, fair. That was great.
Yeah, well, thanks, Yuli. I really appreciate that. You've saved us from having to actually plan and research a topic.
Yeah, no, you did fine. You did research. You came to my talk.
That's true. Yeah. No, I meant in terms of if we didn't have a guest, having to actually.
Oh, I see. Right. Yes.
Put something together ourselves.
Yeah. No, there you go.
All no, right, I'm going away for 3 weeks on Monday, and when I get back, Liam's going away for 2 weeks. So. Yep.
All right. Yeah, so that's why we're trying to get some in the buffer.
We're trying to desperately just get some recording done.
Beautiful. Well, look, if there's some kind of big thing that happens in AI and you want to bring me back in to talk about it, I'd be glad to. Like, you know, whatever. GPT-5 comes out and blows everyone's socks off, whatever it is.
We'll see. If you've been on the road for 4 months and are out of touch, we'll find someone else.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Right in the imposter syndrome again.
I don't know. Like, yeah. Speaking about imposter syndrome, like being on, I guess, the tech side, the inside, and not being as exposed to the AI as you have, I think you start to feel it too.
I don't know. I'm starting to
feel that imposter syndrome. Like, there's a lot happening, and if you're not on,
I know what you mean.
To use a lack of a better term, to not be on the bandwagon, but being from a tech background, you kind of start to feel like, yes, you're falling behind quite quickly.
Well, in the last couple of months, right, all the coding agents have been released, right? You've got Copilot Sui agents, you've got whatever, Devon, Cursor 1.0 got released, Windsurf got bought out by OpenAI. Like, the coding agents, let's not talk about Builder AI. I don't know if you guys heard what Builder AI was. Actually, that's a funny one. Let me tell you that one. So Builder AI was one of these like coding agents, right? There's a bunch. Replit is another one. But it went bust. It went bankrupt. And they went, what the hell happened? And they looked into it. And it was actually 700 outsourced Indian guys in a warehouse somewhere in India, pretending to be AI, doing a mechanical Turk. And what they were doing is they were vibe coding on Cursor and then returning the information back to the users, but like not telling anyone that there was any, you know, Indian outsourcers involved in the project.
Love it.
Anyway, so yeah, the whole concept that all of the coding agents that are coming in and all the movement of vibe coding, which sort of undermines everything that we do in our industry, right? Like, you know, oh, it's easy. Yeah, I could have made that. I'll just vibe code that up. It's like, screw you. Yeah. It took me 3 months, you know?
Yeah. We did do an episode on this.
Yeah, right. Okay, good. Yeah. So, but that whole concept, at the moment, most of stuff that gets produced by vibe coders or by coding agents is, you know, relatively basic, cookie cutter stuff, throwaway kind of stuff, useful for a proof of concept, useful to get a project started, probably not great once you actually get into the weeds.
Yeah.
But there is a but. They're getting better and they keep getting better. And will they stop getting better? Like, are they going to stop getting better before they're better than us? Or are they going to keep getting better past when they're as good as us? Right. That's the fear. I think that's probably, Liam, what you're feeling.
Mm.
Yeah. That worry?
I find, as someone, perhaps as someone who came to this career later in life and started on the back foot already, I personally have found that AI has been something of a leveler. And I think, yeah, I've had to put a lot of time and effort into playing catch up, but I don't feel threatened by AI. I use AI all day, every day in my job. Yeah. And, you know, if I'm working on something and I'm hitting a problem, I'm past the point where it's a pride thing where I want to solve the nuts and bolts of how to solve it. Like, if I know conceptually what I want to figure out, I don't have that sense of pride where I like, well, I have to learn the minutiae of how this arcane piece of this random library works. I'll tell AI what I want. I've done the hard part. I've solved the problem. I just need the actual code.
Yeah.
You know, and that is different to vibe coding. In fact, there's a gulf between that and vibe coding. But, you know, I use AI and it helps me get my job done a lot quicker. And, you know, similarly, at the other end of the spectrum, for boilerplate, why would I spend hours writing boilerplate code when I can get AI to do it? And, you know, there's precedent for this, which is templates, right?
Yeah. Or copying and pasting from Stack Overflow. Yeah. That's still legit. No, 100%. You're exactly right. And there's even already a term coming up for this. So vibe coders, like, you know,
Levi
pressing tab, 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 right? But there's AI empowered engineers, or AI engineers for short, right? Which is the term for what you just said, right? You, being an engineer who understands what's going on, but uses AI to speed yourself up, to get past sticking points, to ask questions, to, you know, put in mundane stuff that you don't have, can't be asked writing yourself, because you know what AI is capable of doing and what it's not. You use it for the things it's good at. You don't use it for the things it's not good at. Like that's what you should be aiming for now. Like as a software.
I mean,
engineer.
if I owned a restaurant, right? If I was a chef, I wouldn't want to be the guy that's there every night cooking everyone's meals. I want to be the guy that's designing the menu.
Mm. Yeah. But I guess then we go back to the argument that if AI is the one cooking the meals, who's coming in behind the person with the experience?
Yeah, that is a big problem. And this is, again, something that I see through my work as well, you know, working with clients that are saying, well, yeah, we can automate a lot of what we do and we can use our data to train it. But the reason that we've got that data is because we've had users, juniors do this work and build up this knowledge base.
And so when juniors are replaced by AI, then you get no one moving into that mid-level, then you've got no one moving into the senior level.
Right. I see what you're saying. Right. I didn't get the metaphor, but now I get it.
Sorry. that might have been that bottle of wine that got between me and...
No, I get it. And yeah, that's part of the conversation at the moment is that, you know, if it's hard to get a junior job because all junior work is now automatable and it's just seniors need because you need the taste, right? Have you heard that word taste used a lot recently?
No.
So taste is the new thing that's needed, that's required. Everyone should be developing their taste. Taste being, this is good, no, that's bad, no, do it again, no, do it like that, but differently, right? Reprompting. So having good taste is now the benefit of your experience, right? So this is why you still need senior engineers, because you vibe code up a bunch of rubbish, but you can identify, no, that's rubbish. Yeah. No, that's not going to work. No, that you need like that, but more like this other thing, right? So, and the problem is you don't gain those intuitions until you have had to do it yourself for a while.
Yep.
And what you're saying is that the people like won't get the experience to do it themselves for a while. So there's a guy called Ethan Mollick. Do you guys know him? I would check him out. I'm obsessed with him. Everything he writes, I'm poring over. But he's a university lecturer, and he used to work for OpenAI, I think. And I can't remember. Anyway, he's an AI guy from a while ago. But he's a university lecturer, and he's thinking, right, how do we prepare, you know, the next generation of software developers who can't go into a junior role and do junior stuff because junior stuff doesn't exist anymore. Right. Yeah. So now at university, we need to be developing these people's tastes. We need to give them the intuitions. How do we do that? How do we fast forward that? How do we use AI to help these people get better than AI? Right. It's really, really interesting topics. Terrifying for people actually who just graduated university and will not have this opportunity.
But it's also quite, I think, scary for our industry, right? Because
There's a big
the likes of big Matt and myself, you know, we're not going to be around for a great deal of time.
Mm.
We're going to be starting to, I know myself personally, sort of starting to transition away from being so much on the tools, right? And that's going to happen. And if there's no one backfilling and building up that experience.
That's the conversation. I don't buy it. Really, I'm seeing a lot of juniors come in, like to SSW, right? We hire through, you know, straight from university through a 5 bootcamp course internship and then into a job. Like the juniors that come in are the ones who are using AI for everything. They're the ones who really know what it's good at and what it's not good at. And these are young guys and they haven't got the benefit of experience, but I reckon they're learning faster than we did. So I don't know. I think their jobs have changed. Like a lot of the juniors will vibe code stuff up for me every now and then when it's appropriate to do something vibe coded, where I just need something basic. It's not going to, nothing's going to be built on top of this. I just need an answer, you know, or something throwaway. Like they'll do that. But they're also like, when there's something harder, they'll use AI to ask the kinds of questions to fill in the gaps in their knowledge. So I do think it's a problem that they're not going to learn. No, I don't think it's a problem. I think they're not going to learn the same way we did. I think they're going to learn a different way. And then they'll end up with the right kind of taste and the right kind of intuition, which they'll gain with the help of AI rather than with the gain of years and years of banging your head against the wall until you know the thing.
Yeah, Liam, I'll just go back to our episode, Nobody Gives a Fuck About Your Code, right? Your job and my job, you know, we're not going away. What our job is to produce a result, right?
Yeah.
So if we find a way of producing that result quicker and easier and with less cost, why wouldn't we use it? That's not going to put us out of a job.
No. I get that. I'm more thinking industry-wide, when our generation move on, who backfills with that experience?
So that's the problem, right? Is that, oh, okay, I see now what Yulia's saying. So what we're saying, Liam, is that if we're not getting the junior coders to, if juniors aren't learning by grinding out code and, you know, gaining experience by writing all those thousands of lines of code, because now AI is doing that, how are the juniors going to gain the experience to become seniors? And I think what Yulia is saying is that they're going to learn it because they may not be writing those lines of code, but they're going to be reviewing them, and they're going to have to learn.
Yeah.
They're going to have to learn how to identify what's shit and needs replacing and refactoring and rewriting without having written it, but by reviewing it.
And I think,
which is a bit shit, by the way. looking at code is not as fun as writing code.
No, absolutely. And I think what I wanted to highlight there is you mentioned the level of experience based on, correlated the level of experience based on the number of lines of code.
Well, it was a bullshit metric that
time spent grinding, right?
Seniority is not based on the amount of code you've written. Seniority is based on your experience, on the problems you've solved, how you've solved them, the problems you've come up against, the times that it hasn't worked, what you've done, and all of your experience. It's not just code you've written, not just the lines of code.
But I was using the time spent writing those thousands of lines of code as a shorthand for all of that.
Okay. But
sorry, I forgot that you've drank a bottle of wine and I've just emailed you. I apologize.
But I guess the point there is, though, on that experience side, you've bundled all that up into this one term, lines of code. But then from the junior's perspective, you're saying you're going to replace all of that experience now, or they need to figure out in a shorter time frame how to gain all of that experience?
Not necessarily in a shorter time frame. Just they're going to be doing different stuff, right? They're not going to be – they're still going to have to do a lot of the stuff you just said, right? They're still going to have to find problems, work out how to solve them, communicate, telegraph their value, you know, come up against conflicts, you know, all the soft skills. None of that's going away.
Think about the way that brewing beer has changed over the centuries or millennia, right? You know, one can be a hobbyist home brewer, as we are. You can be a master craft brewer, right? But even as a professional, the standards and what you have to know and what you have to do to produce an award-winning craft brew now is very different to what it would have been 100 years ago. And the same thing is happening to our industry now. And it's not just our industry, it's all knowledge work, right? Is it the third industrial revolution or whatever it is? Fifth? Yeah. I don't know.
Fourth.
Somewhere between the two.
You're close.
Yeah. Fourth industrial revolution. I mean, it's the same thing, right? We're talking about new ways of producing the same work. And, you know, we started originally with manual labor and then we moved up to other things. And now we're industrializing knowledge work.
Mm.
Right. And those industries and trades, a lot of the trades have gone away over time. Trades do disappear and get replaced by new trades, but the industries are still there and our industry will still be here. But the trades within that industry will evolve and some will go away and some new ones will emerge.
Yeah. Yeah. Your job will be orchestrating a horde of AI agents and getting them to go and do your bidding. I mean, already, like, you've got things like Codex, which are just asynchronous. Yeah. AI coding agents, right? And you just go, you know, have 10 running at a time and you just say, you go and refactor that bit of code and you know, everyone will be like acting as a tech lead with a group of engineers underneath them, and then you're just approving their work and suggesting changes and
whatnot. I get that and I'm not afraid of that. That's not what I'm not worried about that sort of things. What concerns me is the next generation or two generations behind us that get into that position of tech lead, managing these AI engineers. And when I say AI engineers, I mean engineers that are AI. They don't have experience. They don't have the coding level experience, and they don't have that level of experience that we have had by going through all the
unlearned lessons. Let me take you back, though. Let me take you back 20 years, right? Where the seniors of the time when you were first getting, you know, your first job or whatever it was, you know, who would have been bemoaning the same thing because the .NET framework had come out and people were using, you know, existing classes and class libraries and, you know, templates and code templates and scaffolding and stuff that they weren't writing. They were just copying and pasting and then starting from there. And they'd be saying, well, by the time these guys become seniors, they're not going to know how to do, you know, whatever, assembly code. They're not going to know how to do Fortran anymore. They're not going to know how to write 001100. You know, like your level of concerns, your what's it called? Like level of abstraction, like changes over time because the tech kind of obfuscates the stuff that you don't need to care about anymore.
It's 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, you're right. You are right. But I'm still of the school of thought that there is a lot of value in understanding those lower level abstractions.
If there is
value, even now,
then people will keep knowing it. If there's value in it, then okay. There'll be a subclass
Not even if there's value. I guarantee you, Yuli, some of those juniors that you're talking about that you're hiring now through your internship program that are doing the vibe coding, I guarantee you some of them are learning that stuff because it's interesting. In fact, I know some of them are. I know.
But the big difference there is learning assembler language, learning those underlying principles is one thing. That's textbook, out of the textbooks, read all the textbooks you want. You can understand, you can learn that. I know I've done that. I've been in that situation. What I'm talking about is the learning from experience, the learning from being on the job, doing the job, going through those problems, solving those problems day in, day out.
But the thing is those problems are not going to exist anymore and that experience won't matter anymore.
Yeah, they'll be solved. Really? Problems.
That's are the you thing. Sure?
Yes, 100%. Because the problems that existed 20 years ago that people were concerned about the juniors not having the experience to manage are not the same problems that we need experience today to deal with. And they're not, and the problems that we need experience today to deal with are not the same problem that people 20 years from now are going to need to deal with. Old man yells at cloud.
No, I do. I agree. Like the problems I dealt with when I started my career 20 years ago don't exist now, right? Technology has moved on. But so has my experience. My experience grows and evolves over that time.
Yeah.
And your experience will continue to grow and evolve.
My point being, though, if the people behind me are AI agents, there's no one to pick up that experience.
Unless what
there's no one to live that experience, to move forward, to grow, to evolve, and to understand what's going on.
How many people today need to know how to build a car by hand on a production line? Some, because there are some cars that are built by hand on production lines. But the vast majority of cars are built by robots on production lines. And, you know, we don't have a problem that those robots lack the experience of the people that spent 20 years building cars by hand have.
But what about the design of the cars?
That's the knowledge work, right? So that's what we're talking about with the fourth industrial revolution. So that is the part that at the moment humans do better, but as we go along, machines get better and better at those things.
But machines are already better at doing parts of that, right? So if I, and I say this as someone who's been learning CAD over the past 6 months, you know, if I want to design a part in CAD, right? Even now that, you know, there are parts of that work that a machine is better at than I am. Like drawing a curve. That's a real, real simple abstraction, right? And that's a very low level thing. But when you start looking bigger, it's a machine would be better at it. And right now I design static, you know, non-mechanical parts, right? The closest thing that I get to mechanical is things have to align, right? But when we start talking about moving parts and you know, things like that, like, yes, I'm not an engineer. I don't have the experience. But even then, you know, an engineer with experience, I assume, would love to automate parts of that and would love to be able to say to the CAD program, I'm designing this complex system. It's going to do this, this, and this. And I need a complex mechanism to go in here. I don't want to spend time figuring that out and designing how it works because I know the principles. Even then, I don't even
want to. They know the principles because they've got the experience.
But that's them.
This is my point.
Right? No, but that's them, right? I would love to be able to say, I want a machine that does this. I know how, at a high level, I want it to work conceptually. I don't know the minutiae of the mechanics of how this works, and I don't want to. But I want you to design this part of the system for me. And I do that today with code. This is what I said earlier, right?
But you are in that, but in the instance of the CAD side of things, you're a hobbyist.
But right? I'm a professional coder. And as I said earlier, I do that today with code. right? If I'm working on a system.
But you have the experience to understand that the code that it does generate is fit for purpose. In the CAD space, you're a hobbyist. And if it is not fit for purpose, it's not going to kill anyone. It's not going to risk anyone's lives. It's not going to cause any damage. You might break a prototype. So at which point you go back in and you change it, right?
Okay. So how do you mitigate that, Liam? How do you, as a tech lead, mitigate that within your team, even if it's not you writing the code with your experience? And I'll shortcut this conversation. TDD, right? So you have business defined tests. If you start using something like BDD, not our podcast, but behavior driven design, if you start having tests that are written by the knowledge workers, and it's kind of something we spoke about with Chris as well, if you start having your tests that are well defined and can define the behavior of the system, what does it matter how it works under the hood? If it meets those benchmarks, it's fit for purpose.
But my argument there is that those tests are better written by someone with experience.
Yes, but experience in what, right? If that experience is domain expertise, that's inarguably more valuable than technical expertise.
Let me add a slight, because I've been on Matt's side of this conversation, but let me add something in Liam's court here.
Yuli, we're losing the air. What's that? You're breaking up.
And look, we've hit that 2-hour mark. I think it's good.
I'm trying to help you, Liam, you bastard. One thing that I think I do agree with Matt, which is what we started with here, but the rate of change is accelerating, right? And if we just had a different evolution of our jobs, then I agree that we would just evolve with the jobs, and the juniors would slowly become seniors, and they would slowly mold into whatever they need to be in this new kind of world and this new ecosystem of jobs and how they all fit together. And there'll just be a sort of Darwinian system where we'd figure it out, right? But the problem might be that the jobs change so quickly that people are left either fatigued by the amount of change that they have to deal with and the amount of reskilling they have to do, or they're just not able to keep up at all. And they just opt out, right? They just burn out. That is a problem. Potentially.
We have three prior industrial revolutions worth of precedent that tells us that that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that needs to be managed somehow, right? Got to be figured out.
True. And you're both right because that is 100%. And Liam, I apologize. You're absolutely correct. It is exactly a problem. And Yuli's right as well. And that is something that has to be managed. And I've been really talking through my own lens as opposed to thinking about it more broadly. And that's quite self-centered.
But I think it's valuable. And you're absolutely right. Both sides of that are valuable, because like we're going to end up just like with every other previous industrial revolution. There'll be a bit of unrest. There'll be some people who get left behind. There'll be people who take advantage of the opportunities, become disruptors and get ridiculously outsized gains through this whole thing. And then it'll all shake out and they'll become a new normal.
But I mean, look, don't get me wrong here. I've said for many years now, my kids who are 9 and 7 are more than likely going to pick up a career that does not exist right now. Right. The career I've chosen barely existed one generation before me. I get it. Like, careers will evolve, and jobs in 5 years, 10 years time, they're not going to look the same as they do now. I get that. And I understand that. But my concern is that particularly in this space, if we start filling the junior roles with automations and AI, we're going to lose a depth to the industry and to the fields that I don't know what happens at that point when we lose that depth. It just feels like everyone's going to get to the top and they're going to fall off the cliff and then there's going to be nothing to backfill it.
Yeah. And I suppose the issue is if the young people come in and they can't contribute because they haven't got experience and they haven't got taste. And all we need at that point is experience and taste, because the work is no longer done by us. It's done by machines, and our job is only to curate it. And if you haven't got experience and taste, you can't do that. Then there's no way for you to gain the experience and the taste in order to become the useful person to manage the agent.
And I think I've just clicked. So I saw a YouTube video the other day. Have you guys seen? I can't remember his name, but his YouTube channel is Smarter Every Day.
Yeah.
He did a clip where he tried to produce something in America, manufacture a product like a barbecue scraper in America. And he went through the challenges of getting the injection molding tooling built and like the tooling all done in America and making sure everything was 100% built in America. And the problem he had was that it was everything he was trying to do was a dying trade there. Right. Because nothing was coming in from the bottom. You were not getting juniors through the system to build it up. And so if you look at the American industry right now, where they're trying to bring manufacturing back on shore, they can't because they've lost it. Now, I'm not like talking here. I'm not talking here about like the tech industry here in Sydney or here in Australia. I'm talking about the tech industry in whole. Right? If we run this risk of outsourcing the bottom of our funnel to AI, we're going to get to a point where we can't backfill that funnel.
Aging population style.
Yeah, I do take your point. It's just that I think that if you think about it, right, Yuli made a point earlier that we're three people that are lucky to enjoy our jobs and our professions, right? But if you think about the conversation that we had with Lucy, yeah, Lucy doesn't want to be a developer. She doesn't want to be a programmer. She doesn't want to be a CTO, right? No. She is the CEO and co-founder of a tech startup, which she also didn't want to be. She just wants to help mums.
Yep.
Right. If she could have used AI and built that product without having to have a human do it, she would have been just as happy, if not happier. She would have had a successful product and she would have been successful in her mission, which was to bring help to mums. Right. So I do take your, I do understand what you're saying, but my point is nobody gives a fuck about your code. And, you know, like, you are correct. Yes, that is going to be a problem. And those junior positions are going to go away and that experience is going to go away. But it's not going to matter because the tools will exist and people will be using the tools to build products. Just the same as we don't, you know, the skills of how to build a car by hand have gone away. But it doesn't matter because the tools are different. We build cars with machines now.
I'll tell you a terrifying reason why everything we're talking about might not matter. We are talking about dealing with the agents that we have made so far. And the fact that they require babysitting and handholding and all that, right? And we're saying we need taste and we need experience and expertise and all that sort of stuff. What if these systems get to the point that actually they're better at orchestrating agents than we are?
And it's not a what if.
It won't matter that we age out because we'll be replaced by machines that are better, faster, stronger, safer. Anyway,
it's not a what if, right? It's going to happen. Like, this is the thing is, our entire civilization and our entire society is based around needs, right? And it's based, and, you know, yes, there is a hierarchy of needs. And, you know, those needs, in fact, interestingly, the value that we place on those needs is, you know, we place higher value on the things that we don't need and less value on the things that we absolutely are essential. But it will change. And sadly, it probably is going to be painful and there is going to be a lot of fallout and there's going to be people out of work. And there's, you know, just like with the past industrial revolutions, it was very disruptive to civilization as a whole. But things changed and things will change. And I think the nature of work will change. The nature of value will change. Mm-hmm. And probably, you know, not to get too hyperbolic here, but the nature of life will change. Things will change. Things will be very different as a result of all of this. And what we can do is we can fight it and we can resist it and we can be concerned about how are we going to stop things changing this way, which it goes beyond that because I think it's a bit of a fool's errand. I think it's wasting effort. Or what we can do is we can say, well, this is where things are going to go. What if we embrace this change and we make things better as a result of it rather than just trying to fight it to persist an artificial construct, which is what the entirety of our civilization is anyway.
Is that normalcy bias?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Or the inverse of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, look, Yuli, it's after 11 o'clock. It's a school night and I know you've got work tomorrow. And
it doesn't work.
Well, okay. I didn't say that. Yeah. Good.
Yeah,
fair
you
point.
Did. We all know Yuli. He doesn't want
you are expected to put in an appearance tomorrow.
I have to at least turn up, right?
I still have to take the bins out. And look, I really appreciate the time you've given us. I think, Liam, we'll have a chat about this, but I think we'll probably get two episodes out of this conversation. And there's definitely scope for more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Oh, great. Well, I had fun. Thank you, guys.
Well, thanks for coming back on, Yuli. I always look forward to our conversations.
So you can.
It's been such a long time since we've actually sat down and had a chat.
It's been a minute.
And yes. Yeah. I wish I was up there in it / you. That would have been. It sounds like it was a great talk. I can't wait to see the videos come out.
It's out. I just put it on my social media. Check it out.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the episode as well. Yeah,
you cool, think I follow you on social media?
Well, you know, somewhere. I assume you're just pressing refresh on my page every day. Is there anything new? Is there anything new?
He just follows you home.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
Nice one.
But no, seriously, thanks again, Yuli. Really appreciate it. And I think we'll let you go. It's been a great talk, but I do think that is it for this episode or these episodes of the Beer Driven Devs. I'm Matt Goldman.
I'm Liam Elliott.
I was Yuli. Thanks.
Cheers.
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 The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
Who'd have thought that we'd be here this fine evening talking about Yuli's junk?
Well, me.
Yes.
It's a normal Thursday night for me. I was it Wednesday?